Welcome to WeAreTechnology.com's User Friendly 2.0 with host Bill Sickens, Technology Architect.
And this is User Friendly 2.0. As always, I'm your host, Bill Sickens. Joining me as always, my co-host, Bill and Gretchen. Welcome to the last show of 2025.
Happy holidays.
Can you believe it's already the end of the year? I mean, our eighth season starts in 2 weeks. It just is amazing to me. And it's because of all of our wonderful listeners out there. I mean, it's just incredible that we've been able to get this far on this journey with everybody. And I love it. Next week, we're going to be doing a repeat over Christmas and Yule and all of that. And then the first show of 2026, we're going to be looking at technology backward and forward. And then our next, which will be our next new one, I guess. So, you know, there you are. We're only really taking 1 week downtime, but hey, I think we've earned it.
Probably.
So this week we're going to be hitting on a couple of different things. We're going to be talking about Gretchen's book, which is now available. You can buy it. Plug, plug, plug. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes here. hey, you know what? You've earned that too. So it's been quite the journey. And like I say, we'll get into that just after the news. And then the second segment of the show, to end the year on a very positive note, we're going to be talking about some new scams. And the reason why this is important to do right now is there are some things that are popping up that are really getting people. And it's kind of nasty what's going on. So, you know, positive note or not, the positive note is maybe if you hear about this, this won't happen to you. So we're going to be going into that in some detail in the second segment. So that never stops. But on that track, let's go ahead and jump into the news. What do we have this week?
All right, Arcade 1UP to be acquired by Basic Fun.
All right, so for anybody that's not familiar with all this, let me kind of go over what all of that even is, and then we will talk about what's going on. So Arcade 1UP is a company that has been around for a while that builds three-quarter size arcade cabinets. So like the games when you went into the arcade, Pac-Man and so on, they make a lot of licensed reproductions of these things that are a touch smaller than the original. They're meant for home use, so no coin doors, and the cabinets are not built to the same quality that you would need for an arcade, but they work fine for home. I have one of them, Golden Axe, game here that has that and some other things on it. So, you know, it is, for the market that it's meant for, they're actually pretty good. And there's different schools of thoughts on all of this, but they've been doing some interesting stuff, and there's been rumors floating around last week that they are shutting down operations. And we've wanted to do some research on it because there was no official statement made until very recently this week. And what's happening is the company is not being acquired exactly, but a lot of their assets are by a company called Basic Fun. So question comes to mind, what is Basic Fun? Well, I had to look into that a little bit too, but they actually have a lot of brands that it looks like they've put together and acquired that you will have heard of if you haven't heard the name of the company. And I'll give you a few of these. Care Bears.
Oh.
Tonka Trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Light Bright.
Yep.
Lincoln Logs.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And the list goes on, including arcade classic handheld games. So it does seem like kind of a fit. So the question that comes out about this, and it's actually one in a broader sense that is worth considering, is a lot of the Arcade 1UP cabinets are online. So the Golden Axe one I have is a self-contained unit. You plug it in, you turn it on, you play it kind of thing. Okay, so that's fine. It's one of the older ones. But I know another one I have, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, actually has an app, and you go online and can do all this stuff to it. And some of their other devices, like the Infinity Game Table that they make, which is kind of cool, requires being online to work and all of that. So one of the biggest concerns with this, in addition to it would be too bad to see all this stuff go away, is if they shut down and shut down their servers, a lot of this equipment will stop working, at least in part.
That would be bad.
You know, it's something to consider because really anything that's online and has an app potentially could have that happen, and it does all the time. So what's being said here is Basic Fun is going to be keeping to some extent the functionality of these things, hopefully fully, but that has not been clarified yet. In the different places that I've been reading about, I tried to reach out to them to ask and wasn't able to get any direct information on it, but they are saying to some extent. So hopefully these things will keep working. And as far as what's going to actually happen with the product line, the arcade cabinets and all the rest of the stuff that is currently made by Arcade 1UP is also something that we'll have to see because they haven't been too direct on it, but they are acquiring the assets, not the company, but some of the assets. So So it stands to reason that they're going to still keep making some of these products or some version thereof.
NASA has a space telescope that is 42 feet long.
Yeah, it's called the Roman Space Telescope, or the Nancy Grace Roman Space Telescope. And that name has been changed to be obviously named after this person from the Wide Field Infrared Study Telescope. I can see it's the last show of our year. I can talk, really. this telescope is designed to explore everything from our outer solar system to the edge of the observable universe, including planets throughout our galaxy and dark energy. Comes in at over 42 feet long, 12.7 meters, about the length of a semi-truck trailer, with more than 14 feet wide when fully deployed. The primary mirror is 2.4 meters or 7.5 feet in diameter, which is about the same size as Hubble Space Telescope's primary mirror. So, biggest difference between that and Hubble, the resolution and stuff is pretty similar. It has 100 times larger view, and it weighs 80% less. Difference in technology, you know?
That's so nice.
And so this is going to be interesting. There's a lot of different instruments and stuff on this that we can dig into that would take longer than doing right now, but this might be a good topic because I know there's a lot of interest in space stuff. And the other thing I want to say here is that, you know, when you hear us airing, if you're hearing it while we're airing, it's the last week of December 2025. We record on Wednesdays, and Saturday is the day we air. The 19th is the day the aliens are going to come from 3i Atlas. So if we're still on the air, I want to welcome a new audience. This telescope would have been nice if it had been available to see them, but hey, we'll get to see them in person. And if not, well, then, oh, well.
Bummer. Okay. Disney Disney to invest $1 billion in OpenAI in major deal that boosts Sora in Hollywood.
Yeah, so that's a mouthful, isn't it? And on the press release, there's a picture of Darth Vader. So I'm thinking, okay, what are we doing here? So I had to do a little bit of investigation. And first of all, the term Sora. It is a product that AI makes that pushes out clips, video clips.
Uh-huh.
So users of the AI video creation platform, according to the press release, will now be able to create clips of 200 characters from Marvel, Pixar, and Star Wars franchises. That's what Sora is for.
Oh.
So I don't know exactly what we're going to see them doing with this, because when they tried to do AI with Darth Vader's voice, that didn't go too well.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember the story from that earlier in the year. They used it in a game or something, and players could get Jones, you know, or Jones to say things with his very iconic voice and naughty things, because of course that was the first thing everybody tried to do, and it worked. So,
okay, that's bad. So, though I anyway, haven't so seen be some interesting.
See I don't.
I've been seeing some interesting things on YouTube, and I'm wondering if that is related to this, a whole bunch of what if stories for Star Wars. So I'm wondering,
and it may very well be. I think that if I was to put a kind of looking at retro tech a little bit and describing this in early days, there was something called Napster. You probably remember it. You could download illegal music. And from that, everybody was going to, oh, we're going to stop it. We're going to stop all of this. Well, I don't know about you, but I have an MP3 player and have for the last 20 years. And I think this is a similar direction, that what they're wanting to do is allow fans to create stuff using Disney's intellectual property, but still have control over what's being done. So it's like the, if you can't beat them, join them kind of philosophy here, which actually makes some sense, because this would be something that done right would allow for audience interaction, fan interaction again, without feeling like they're being
smothered to death.
Yeah. And, with some of the changes, as of recording right now, we don't know for sure, but the CEO of Lucasfilm is supposed to be changing at the end of this year. If that happens, maybe we're looking at some things that will bring the fans back into Star Wars and some of these other franchises, which in my opinion would be a very good thing, because that's always what it was about when George Lucas ran it, and it still should be what it's about. It's the fans. It really is that make these things successful or not, and really give the energy that Star Wars has.
A place that already has enough of these, 3D printing Spider-Bot can build a house in one day.
You mean Australia?
Yeah. Australia, yeah. And Bill, go ahead and, before we started recording, you gave an explanation. I hear there's spiders in Australia, like real ones.
Yes, terrifying things.
So, I don't know. I guess if you have them, you know, build on them, this thing actually does kind of look like a spider. It is designed, as the headline says, to print full-size homes up to 2,150 square feet in just 24 hours. Talk about production of houses. It says it operates with the speed and efficiency of over 100 bricklayers without waste or fatigue, which actually is kind of a big deal, because if you've ever seen a construction site, there's a lot of waste that goes, almost as much material that goes into the property seems to go into the dump. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice to see something that would make that a little more sustainable. It uses sustainable cement-free mix made from sand, crushed brick, and recycled glass, producing walls that are fireproof, flood-resistant, and highly durable. Its six-legged design, i.e. the spider, allows it to move and build across uneven terrain, ideal for construction in remote or disaster-hit areas where human labor is limited. And I could see something like that. I know here we have a huge housing shortage. You know, if we could get more homes that were affordable and that kind of a thing, it would make a huge difference for the quality of life of a lot of people. So looking at these kind of technologies, there actually is a very valid, good thing for them as long as it works. The biggest concern I have about stuff like this is that going in, it has to work. If this comes out and there's a whole bunch of problems with the houses that are built or quality of construction or anything like that, that could really throw this off the rails. On the flip side, if it's successful, we could see something that really could help in a lot of parts of the world where we need shelters. And from what I see of the pictures of what this builds, it's nothing bad. It's actually a really nice looking house.
Cool. California judge rules that Tesla engaged in deceptive marketing around autopilot.
All right. So anybody that's been off world, in addition to please let me join you, Tesla's had some controversies. Let's just put it in the recent past here. One of them is their autopilot thing. And this whole thing blew up and got into court and has been dragging through the legal system for a while. And what it is that the autopilot or full self-driving is not actually an autopilot and it's not actually full self-driving. And the state of California is saying, well, there's a problem if you say that it is this and it's not, you know, i.e. deceptive advertising, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So this has finally come out, and basically what has been recommended here is that the company should face a 30-day suspension of each of its licenses to sell and manufacture cars in the state. According to the California DMV, first of all, in my opinion, it's like, ouch, you know. But what's happening right now is they've been given a 60-day window to fix this problem. And then they're going to go from there. If they aren't resolved in 60 days, then they move ahead with the suspension. So it's basically been stayed until they fix this problem. With what's going on with Tesla right now, they may or may not do. I mean, it's entirely possible they're just going to say, well, yeah, tough that you've said that. So I don't know. It's hard to say what direction this is actually going to go. But in all reality, even though this doesn't sound like a lot, I do think a 30-day suspension of being able to sell your product in a state like California probably would be noticed on a bottom line somewhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows what this is. If it forces them to fix the practices of marketing this for something that it's not, then it's done its job. If they actually get the suspension, which most other companies, I would say they'd fix it, this 50-50 shot. But it'll be interesting to see where that goes. So I do think it's kind of nice to see that the state has actually said, hey, what you're doing is wrong and you need to fix it. And we're actually going to do something if you don't, because that doesn't happen so many times when there's these kind of problems. They get buried, yeah, or whatever, you know, happens or doesn't. So this is one where it's actually going to be, you know, interesting beneficial? To see where this goes. I'm sorry.
Beneficial. To the general public, you know.
So it seems that the market hasn't really taken too much interest in this, as Tesla stock price closed at a record on Tuesday, largely due to increased enthusiasm on Wall Street surrounding the company's plan for its robotaxis and driverless technology. I wonder if the driverless technology is going to be really driverless. We'll see. Maybe another 30-day fine if it's not.
Uh-oh.
The Oscars will move to YouTube in 2029, leaving their longtime home of ABC.
So we've talked about a lot of the changes that have happened very recently, really. It's been gearing up. Cable cutting and cord cutting, all that stuff's been around for a while. But the last 2 or 3 years, it seems like it's really changing. COVID kind of initiated this, but with the technology where it is now and stuff, it does seem like the old method of television, linear television, that kind of stuff is certainly retro. I don't know if I want to say obsolete, there still is a place for it. But we are seeing a lot of different things happen like this, like the NFL too. You watch it online, and the Oscars moving or the Academy Awards in this matter moving. Sorry, Academy Awards and the Oscars are different. The Academy Awards moving in 2029 is a big deal because it is something that is a huge change from the way that they've always done it in the past.
Well, you get an Oscar at the Academy Awards.
I understand that, but it's the Oscars. I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking there a little bit, but it is. It's the Oscars. People refer to it, but it's really the Academy Awards. I don't know. Maybe it's just because I've worked in the industry that I care. But all right. Speaking of Oscars and Academy Awards, let's talk about your new book.
Yeah, right.
I think the award that should be given here is that you've had the patience and the ability. It is actually published. It's finally.
I got it done. It actually happened. You know,
so we've actually got two different things we're talking about here. And one book, The Night School Journal, we've talked about both of these in the past, and we're going to get into a little bit more detail on them here in just a minute. But The Night School Journal is a book, Gretchen, that you started writing back in, 2012, I think?
2012 or 2013, something like that. Yeah.
So a while ago, and then you took a pause.
There's different philosophies on how to write a book. And there are some people who just sit down and, I'm just going to write this story, you know, and they don't outline anything. And I'm normally an outline kind of person. But when I started that story, I just sat down and started writing it. And right. So I kind of went along, and all of a sudden it's like, I don't know where I want to go now. I don't, you know, and so I had to like set it aside and work on something else. And it took me like 10 years to finally circle back to it and get myself to give it an ending.
And the thing of it is I had read the first part that you had written back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. whatever it is now, and liked it and was hoping for an ending. And the one that you wrote, I think, did really well. You've kind of modified it from its original setup. So it's actually part of Cyberhawk now. Mm-hmm. You know, there are connections there. It's not part of the actual series, but it is definitely the connection there. And basically, the synopsis of the book is a young man who is a modern day knight, basically, or training to be. And things that revolve around that. So can you give us a little bit better of a maybe a synopsis than what I just did?
He's not a knight yet. He's a kid. This is the coming of age story. This is where a kid, he's just a regular kid. He's not like super fancy like Harry Potter, who's a wizard or you know, an orphan or anything. He's just a regular kid who has divorced parents. And he finds himself going to a private school that he picked kind of by accident. And it turns out it's a school for knights. And he makes wonderful connections there with lots of really neat kids who kind of change his life. So it's a coming of age story. It's
fun. Ladies and gentlemen, that is why you let the author describe their book instead of me.
All
seriousness, this has been a journey, and I've been, you know, working on some of the logistical stuff, but Gretchen, you've been really doing the thing, and we've hit some things. You know, this year we've had a lot of amazing authors on talking about some of the different things that they've dealt with, both positive and negative, and some of the pitfalls. And I think we have a bit of more of an understanding of all that now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Writing the book is actually, and coming up with the ideas is the easy part.
Yeah.
It's the getting it edited and published to the point where, other people like it and will put it out there. And then the marketing is going to be another beast to wrestle and wrangle. I'm not a marketing person, so this should be interesting.
We'll circle back to that in a minute here, but just talk about the journey a little bit. And this is where, you know, you really do have to check everything out. And sometimes when you do, you still can have problems.
Mm-hmm.
The book is being conventionally published in our market. It's going to be print on demand and some others. And it just is the way that the distributor is handling it. But what happened is we had a large company, large publisher that's well known and well respected that was going to take care of this and sent us off to a department that, unknown to us, was owned by a international situation. and we had gotten 2/3 of the way through the editing process and finalization. All of a sudden, I had sent them an email on something and it bounced. Website was gone, email was gone, just all at once. About 2 weeks later, I get an email from a Gmail account saying, well, yeah, the website's been down for maintenance and we're still here. So just contact us over Gmail. As I'm going, no.
Yeah, that doesn't instill a whole lot of confidence. And I have a friend who's in the entertainment industry who's kind of acting like my guardian angel. And he's like, you need to get the heck out of Dodge. Oh, okay. Yeah.
which is exactly what happened. But it wasted like 3 months of effort. And
it did.
You know, and then they kept coming back with stuff where they were editing your words and changing things around. And, you know, it's like, no, you don't change the author's words. I mean, you do if you're asked to, but that wasn't the case here. It was more go through it, make sure all the words are spelled correctly and format it. And that somehow, you know, if you want a coffee, the barista just needs to say, here's your coffee, sir. We don't need drama. But we got it.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Tom is laughing somewhere.
Yes, I'm sure. Inside story. Go to the website. The details are there, but you'll have to dig for them a little bit. Anyway, on that note, we were able to fortunately get out of that. I had to stop a payment on a credit card, you know, as a chargeback and everything. So we didn't lose money. But fortunately, we were able to do that. Not everybody is. And
so should we mention where you can find it?
Yeah, well, of course, we're going to mention where you can find it, and it's on Amazon. And there's two ways to get to it. You can either do it directly at Amazon, or if you go to userfriendly.show and go to our shop and click through it from there, we get a little bit of a reference for that, plus anything else you might buy on Amazon at that time. So I don't mind taking a little bit of Jeff Bezos' money. He doesn't seem mind giving it to us, so it does help the show. It doesn't cost any more to do that. But the thing of it is, it's available on Amazon, but there's a direct link on our website. Cyberhawkheroes.com is the main website for the book. You, of course, can get to it from there as well. And right now we're going through, and as Gretchen, as you started to say earlier, dealing with the marketing, which is updating the websites and doing all the other stuff. And the distributor sent over a marketing plan outline, which we're going through now. We're going to do this is our soft launch, as they call it. And then the hard launch will be in about 30 days where there's going to be, you know, regular promotion and all that kind of stuff. But definitely something that's worth checking out, in my opinion. Now, it's on Kindle. If you prefer an ebook, you can get it on the Kindle.
Mm-hmm. You could get a hard.
Yeah. So just depending on what is preferred. Or you know what? I think you should check them out. Get both. Go ahead and buy both and see what you prefer. You know? But the thing of it is it's been quite the journey. And then the next one that's just about out is the first one in the Cyberhawk series called Rise of Heroes. And we're through the final editing process on that right now as we speak here. So probably by the time this airs, hopefully it will be available to purchase also at cyberhawkheroes.com. And I don't know, Gretchen, is there anything else you want to tell us in our last 30 seconds of the segment?
I don't know. I can hardly believe that it's actually happening. I'm excited.
And I think from everybody, congratulations. I mean, you've worked for this, and it's kind of nice to really just see it actually be there. All right, this is User Friendly 2.0. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. This is User Friendly 2.0. Check out our website at userfriendly.show. That is your one stop for everything user friendly. Playback episodes, check out the podcast, see what's coming up. Give us your questions and your comments. We appreciate your feedback, userfriendly.show. And you can also check out our social media on Facebook, Blue Sky, and LinkedIn, which is also on the webpage if you'd like to follow us there. All right. So let's close for the year with something very, very happy. Sarcasm sign is actually a topic that's come up and was something that we were asked to talk about. And when I started looking into this, it's kind of like, yeah, we all need to be aware. This time of year, we tend to all get very busy. You're dealing with stuff, especially right now. Christmas is when this airs, 5 days away or something. I mean, it's that time of year. Last minute stuff. And you know, you're dealing with things, trying to think about it. And even people that are very, very up on scams are starting to have some problems. And what I wanted to do was talk about a few of these Now, these aren't necessarily like new. This has just come out and somebody's dreamed it up, but there's either stuff that's happened in the past that's really coming back, or kind of a reboot, if you will, or, you know, update to something that was going on before. But the first one here is one that a lot of people have had this happen, and it's very easy to do. This started about 2 years ago and has been ramping up, and it has to do with the tap cards, you know, like tap to pay. So most of our credit cards, you can put them into the reader, as always, with the chip, or you can tap them. Well, that's fine and usually very secure, except at an ATM machine. Now, here's what's going on. It involves glue and somebody that appears to be very friendly, and usually two somebodies, but you don't see the other ones. You walk up to the ATM machine, try to put your card in, and the reader won't accept your card. Can't put it in. And someone, oh, yeah, you know, we were having problems with that either. Just use your tap. The reader won't do it. Well, they put glue in the reader is what's happened. So people started having problems where money was missing from their accounts after using the ATM machines in this process. Mm. Well, here's why. When you use a standard ATM card, your session is open while the card's in the machine. So when you take back your card, it closes the session. Well, you can't do that with a tap card, so it opens and then closes later. So what happens is you do need to re-enter your PIN code on every transaction. So that's where the other person's somewhere standing there watching you put in your PIN. So when you leave the machine, unless you manually log out, it's still open. So the bad guy just comes up afterwards and starts doing other transactions on your session, on your account.
Okay, so then the lesson here is if you try and use your card and you can't stick it into the reader like you normally do, and somebody comes up to you and suggests this, you need to go, oh, I'll do this later, and walk yourself inside the bank where the ATM is located, and go, hey, and tell them what's going on.
Yeah, it's actually, you're very much spot on. Report it, because people aren't going to know about this. And yes, there's a way that you can make sure you log out of your account when you close the session. Now, I personally don't use debit and ATM cards anymore, just because with all the scamming that's going on, and you lose a credit card number, somebody can run up your card, you lose your ATM debit card number, someone actually can clean out your physical money from your bank account. And so, you know, you definitely want to be careful with this type of thing. And the tap to pay is usually secure. It's encrypted and all of that. But this is one situation where there's a little bit of a glitch in the system, because the ATM doesn't know when to shut down your session. There's no way it would. So They've just done it where it keeps it open. And yeah, you have to re-enter your PIN code. Well, you know, somebody watching, if you're not thinking about it, and this other person's, you know, trying to be nice, oh, yeah, just tap to pay. The other person standing there, I can assure you, is looking at that keypad. And that's how they get the information. So there is a way to log out. Unfortunately, it's not the same for every bank. So you have to figure out, based on the ATM you're using, how to do it. But if something doesn't seem quite right, like the reader doesn't work, which would be really weird, Gretchen, you're spot on. I would say, you know, just listen to yourself and, you know, go into the branch. If you're not at the bank, figure something else out. But just don't let yourself get scammed, because this would be very, very easy to do.
Yeah, and you don't need that heartache.
No, you don't. And it is something that, especially around this time of year, even the other thing of it is there's all kinds of differences in the time you have to get your money back and make claims. And, you know, the banks, it's different from a credit card. But even if you do get on it, you're going to be without your money for some period of time. And if it's right before Christmas and you're trying to do your shopping, and now all of a sudden you don't have your resources to do that, even if you get it back in a few days, it could still really screw things up.
Yeah. So what's next? What next other thing do we have to worry about?
Yeah, the next one is a new version of a scam that has been around for a while. Gretchen, your mom had this happen to her, I know, and it's called the panic call.
Oh, yeah.
So before I get into how they've changed this, tell us what happened to your mom real quick.
Okay. She was getting a call from a female that sounded completely upset, and she was calling her grandma. And, well, that's, you know, my mom has grandchildren. So, and she was trying to get my mom to send money because she was in jail and she was in trouble and all of this drama. It was bad. My mom didn't fall for it. My mom's pretty smart. She's also had others call. A young man who called and says, Grandma, I need blah, 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 blah. And of course, my mom, not having any male grandchildren, says to him, you need to get a better job. You're ruining your life. Because the guy was a scammer.
Well, of course he was, you know, and it's just so. The thing of it is what's happening now. This is something that's been around for a while. I think that happened to her a couple of years ago, if I remember.
Quite a few years ago.
Yeah. So that part's not new. But what they're doing now, the new twist on it, if you will, is the scammers go online, your Facebook or whatever, and get voice clips or record a phone call or something. But they figure out a way to get the actual person's voice. And then using AI, they now make the call in the correct voice of the person that would be the daughter or whatever that's in jail. You know, victim gets a call, I've been arrested, send money now, kind of like what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. But it is a lot more dangerous because it's, you're going to recognize the voice is what it is. So the way they work this is emotional pressure. The idea is to get you all worked up. Oh, there's a, you know, kind of thing to not think about things completely. They still use caller ID spoofing, even though that's supposed to be fixed. It isn't completely. And the sound, the voice sounds right. That's the thing. Your voice is now a password and it's public. Best way to think about it on that. So how do you defend yourself against this? Well, one of the things they're suggesting, and this goes back to when these things started, is having what they call a family safe word. In other words, it's like a password. Everybody that's supposed to know it knows it. And when you call, you can ask the individual, well, you know, what is the password or however you would do that. And if they're not able to come up with it, then there's a problem. You're probably going to get hung up on at that point. The next thing to do is to hang up and call the relative or whoever back directly, not at the number on the caller ID either. You would want to call them back at a known good phone number to, you know, find out what they're doing. And really, when it comes down to this, never act on panic calls. The whole idea is you've got a loved one that's in trouble and yeah, you're going to want to help them, but you know, and it's hard to say this because it's not like you don't want to help your family, but take the steps to make sure you're doing the right thing, because 99% of the time it won't be. And it's something in these kind of things, because they'll eventually get you to send money with gift cards or, you know, these transfer things that you can't get it back and that type of thing. And it becomes incredibly difficult, if even at all possible, to recover from something like that. And people have lost thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. There's really some stories out there that are very, very scary.
So somebody's going to get a lot of coal this year.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, is something called dark pattern scams.
Dark pattern scams?
Yeah. All right. So this is another one. It's been described to me that this isn't even illegal. It's just deceptive. Okay. I'm going to use an example of where this really hit the news about 2 years ago, but we're starting to see it in a lot of other places. And it's a product called PayPal Honey. Now, PayPal, for anybody that might not know, is a service that used to be owned by eBay, and you use it to pay things online. They've gotten into cryptocurrency and stuff lately and that type of a thing. There's different schools of thought on if it's safe or if it's not, or if people like it or if they don't. But that's not particularly relevant, because what's happening here is another part of this where you'll get a pop-up ad somewhere or email or whatever, even from PayPal, because they own this company, PayPal Honey. And it says, install this browser extension. Anytime you go to a website, we'll find the best deal. We'll get you coupon codes. We'll do all of these different things. Okay. So what's actually happening here, and the reason why this is a problem, and PayPal Honey, by the way, is not the only one that's doing this. It's just one of the better known ones. Is two things. Most of the time, especially content creators on YouTube, shows like us, a lot of different places, will have links that get your organization, your show, a little bit of a kickback if you make a purchase through it. So like, you know, we were talking about your book, Gretchen, if you go to User Friendly's website and click on your book, you still pay the same price for it. That doesn't change anything. But because we've referred you to Amazon, there's a thing, a promotion thing in there where we get a little bit back. And then once you're on Amazon, of course, if you buy anything else, it works for that too. So it's just a really nice way to help creators and other small businesses. But when you install this thing, when you go to the website that it's referring you to, it changes the referral code unknown to you to send the money to PayPal or PayPal Honey. So now the person referring or the company referring never sees what they should see from doing the promotion. And the other thing that's coming down with this, at least the allegation is that it doesn't always give you the cheapest price either. So if you're the person buying it, it might make some suggestions, but if for some reason they have a contract with somebody or something else, or want to promote one brand over another, it will never tell you about the lowest price.
So you really have to think for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think of it this way. If the product is free, it's really not you're the product. When you think about it, right? There is a cost. It just might not be money out of your pocket. And this is true, especially in shopping. So best thing to do is review your browser extensions. The different browsers have different ways of doing this, but they're usually pretty straightforward to get in. Look up instructions on how to do that if you need it. Just, you know, search for it. And remove anything that you don't actually use, or at least deactivate it. So if you're going in there and going, what is this? You probably aren't going to use it. And if you do need to use it, you'll figure out very quickly that whatever it is went away and was legitimate. Then you just reactivate it or reinstall it. But again, this is something that actually affects the seller and the buyer in a negative way and makes money for the third party. Now, there's some of these that seem to be very legitimate. A Capital One credit card has one, and I've never heard of a problem with that. And I know that I've used that for some referrals and things just to be sure. I started testing all this when I found out about this. And that one, we did get the credit for, at least when I used it. So it's not that they're all bad, and it's not that all of these services are somehow should be avoided, but it is very important to make sure that you're doing business, I would say, with somebody that's legitimate, but PayPal is a legitimate company. So it's not like, you know, this is some third party weirdo thing. It is something that is out there. So anyway, again,
that just sounds like they deserve to have coal stuffed in their stocking.
Yeah.
It just seems like a cruddy thing to do.
Going to be in court. There's a class action that was filed, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So everybody in the class action will, you know, get a free order of hash browns at the local restaurant when it settles, but the attorneys will get paid. oh my goodness. All right. Let's see. Next one that I had on my list here is remote chip scam. So back to the chip cards. All right. So this is another interesting one, and one to think about again with the, contactless tap to pay things. Modern version of ATM skimming. If you haven't heard of skimming, that's where the bad guy puts something over the reader so it can read your card as you're putting it in. It usually has a camera so it can see the keypad. And chip cards and these type of things were designed to help with this. Well, the bad guys have figured out a bit of a way around that. And one that you might not even know that you've had this happen until days later when you see your credit card statement. The way this works is the thieves have two NFC, near field communication devices. This is the kind of thing that's built into the reader at the credit card machine, ATM, whatever, to read the card when you tap it. So you have a receiver on one end and somebody standing at the, let's say it's a payment terminal at a store or something, you're standing at the self-checkout at the payment terminal. But the other guy has a reader and they walk by your wallet and it transmits the code from the card in your wallet to the receiver. And the receiver unlocks the payment terminal and you're paying with, now the bad guy's paying with your credit card. And you don't even know that this happened. The terminal believes that your card is physically present. You know, and that kind of a thing. So this is becoming a thing. And the equipment to do this is not that hard or expensive to buy. You can find NFC transceivers for legitimate purposes on Amazon and a lot of other places. And there are good reasons to have that kind of technology. This is a bad way to use it. So you're dealing with something here where there's no physical card theft. It works through pockets, jackets, or purses, and the victims many times don't realize until quite a bit later.
What about those weird sleeves?
Yeah, that's exactly what you do about it.
Oh, okay.
So RFID blocking wallets, sleeves, there's different things like that that you can buy. It's fairly inexpensive. Again, you can get these anywhere online and at a lot of stores. And you basically slide your card, and these are good to use for passports and other things that have these type of technologies, but you slide your card into the pocket and block it. And the other thing of it is, if you don't see tap to, or if you don't use tap to pay, if that's not something you use, you can turn it off usually at the credit card. So you can go into your account, your online account, and say, hey, I don't want to use this. Don't have it work. The other thing that is recommended for this and a number of other things is most credit cards offer a way that you can go on into your settings and get alerts when the card is used. And a lot of people have these set up at defaults and different things like that, but you want to set something called low transaction alerts, because a lot of times the people who are doing this aren't going to run up $10,000. That would set off a lot of bells, but they might do $100 kind of thing. And from that standpoint, those are just, you know, some of the different things. It's always a good idea to keep track of your financial accounts and use the tools that are available for it. It takes a little more time. But at the end of the day, it's going to save you a lot of time and heartache should you get hit with one of these mini scams, you know? So it's too bad, really, because the technology and the convenience of things like tap to pay are really good. And they actually are designed well. They're encrypted, all this different kind of stuff. But if you can actually read and do it in real time, you do get around that protection. And it is definitely something that I know I put my cards in the blocker. And it is a little bit of a pain because every time you use it, you have to pull it out and then it's hard to put it back in. I've had that, but you still should do it because it's that little bit of difficulty is definitely worth doing so that you don't have these kind of things happen. And if it's a credit card, then you have, you know, my card's been run up and you call the credit card company and deal with it. But like we were saying earlier, if it's a debit card, they actually get to your physical money and you want to make sure that that just simply doesn't happen. All right. Do we want another one? Because there's more.
Oh, this is so cheerful.
Yes. Happy holidays, everybody. Let's tell you how your money's going to get stolen. Actually, what we want to do is make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's really what this is about.
Yeah.
So this one's not a new one, but it's still happening and happening a lot. And it has to do with the use of fake QR codes on things like parking meters, restaurant menus, that type of a thing. So there's a lot of places where you can go. We're at Pittick Mansion, which is a museum here in the Portland area that we like to go to every year. And you have to pay at the parking lot to pay. Now, that might already be considered a ripoff, but it's a legal one from the city. But this part isn't. What the scammers will do is you scan a QR code to pay for your parking. In this case, restaurants, you might scan a QR code to see the menu. There's lots of different ways that they make this work. Well, what the bad guy does is they stick a fake QR code on top of the real one. And if you do it right, you don't know it. It's almost like a skimmer in a way. So now you scan the code. It goes online to a place where you can make your payment. So now you're putting in your credit card information and stuff to make the payment for parking and giving the bad guy all of that information. And on top of that, you didn't pay to park. So you're going to probably have a pretty good ticket when you come out too, because they're going to say, well, you never paid. You know, same thing on the restaurant menus and stuff like that too. We ran into this when Jeremy was still with us. We were up at, I think, Lake Tahoe, or one of the areas around Lake Tahoe.
Was it South Shore or North Shore?
It would have been by the California border on 80. Truckee.
Okay.
And we went to a restaurant. This was right after COVID kind of was starting to back off, but they had everything touchless. So to get the menu for the restaurant, you had to scan a QR code that was on the table. And this wasn't something I was thrilled about anyway, but it worked. I mean, you got the menu up. We didn't have a problem, but that's another place where the bad guys will put fake stickers. So you might even get the menu from that restaurant if they've done their work. And then when you go to pay for the meal, if something like, okay, you know, put your order in, now pay for it. And you do, giving your credit card number to the bad guy.
Lovely.
So reason it works, really what it comes down to it is QR codes feel official. We see them all over the place. And generally they are. Our press badges have QR codes on them. I mean, you know, it's used very much in a lot of different ways. You don't see the URLs before clicking. You scan the code and it opens to whatever website that URL goes to. You don't actually see what it is. You can look, it'll be in the bar, but most people don't because you don't think to do it. And you do see this a lot in tourist areas. You're on, you know, holiday and thinking about other things. And the bad guys know that. They know exactly what they're doing. One of the things that's been told to me too is I've worked, you know, cybersecurity and worked with people and that. And we have 8 hours a day to defend against it. These guys have 24 hours a day to come up with these schemes. So that gives them a little bit of an edge, you know, and unfortunately it does. So one of the things to look for is if you do scan onto one of these things and the payment site feels a little off, or it asks you for unusual extra personal info, or there are things like typos or odd URLs, that kind of stuff. You know, the restaurant menu goes to myrestaurant.ru, which that extension is Russia. That probably would be a good idea to think that there's something really wrong here, you know, if it feels off. Unfortunately, with the use of AI and stuff now, they're able to make it look a little more real. It isn't as like it was. I think that the best way to defend against this, and there's not 100%, is when you scan the QR code that you want to use. It does actually allow you to see the URL that it's going to. Just most of us don't look at it. And depending on how your device is configured, it may or may not automatically be on the top of the browser. but there is a way to turn it on and a way to check for it, and just get in the habit of taking a second or two to, you know, look at it. If it's in the case of the parking lot, it's supposed to go to a thing called Parking Kitty, and it says so right on the sign, and it did. Mm-hmm. But if it's going to something completely different or some weird thing, then it's a way to know that's probably not something you want to get, you know, get involved with and deal with. So anyway, just some stuff and some heads up. It's the time of year we're supposed to be spending time with our families and being able to enjoy ourselves, participate in our various religions, and do what's important to us. Not a time that you want your money stolen. So just thinking about this a little bit more might save you a huge amount of hassle. All right, now that we're done with all of that, Christmas is coming up. It's Yule. New Year's is right around the corner. I can't believe it's already that time of year, and I cannot believe we are starting the eighth season of User-Friendly 2.0. I know we talked about it up in the top as well, but I don't know. It's just so much has happened. We have another guest host that's going to be joining us this coming year in 2026, which we'll go into when we get there. But we were talking about some of these different things. And, you know, User-Friendly was first on the air in 2013, which mm-hmm. might be version 1.0 or just User-Friendly. We've talked about this a little bit. We started in a mall in Reno. You know,
it was crazy,
but we got our feet wet, you know, and during that time, we've had some years where we've produced every week on 1.0. We had some years that we just did podcasts. Now the 2.0 version, since we moved over to Salem Media, has been pretty much weekly. It's been an amazing thing. It's been a lot of fun. There's been a lot of things to the journey. I would tell you, you know, we started that before COVID. So we were in studio at the time we started, you know, doing this in that revision, and then COVID happened, so all that closed down, so we all got our home studios. And COVID ended, and we all decided, well, it's a lot easier not to have to drive 45 minutes each way, you know, to record. Not necessary. And mm-hmm. Bill, like, your ability to participate is because of the way the technology has changed, because you're not local, you know, and it's wonderful that that's yeah. it's a thing that you can do.
Yeah, it is.
So the other thing that's been really cool about the change in technology too is the fact that we used to be limited on guests. We've got some amazing guests, as you know, that come on the show, but we were limited to who could come into the studio, which meant Portland, you know, there's a lot of people available here, but then they too came in, and with some of the new technology, we're able to talk to people all over the world and it's just amazing. So, you know, so as far as all of that goes, it's been an amazing year. We're looking forward to another one. And for the last time, I'm going to be able to do this. I invite everybody to participate in the season of giving. This year, we've been proud to support the William Temple House. Go to userfriendly.show or williamtemple.org to see what they're doing. They are raising money. They help provide free or low-cost mental health services to people that need it in Portland, and also operate, which this year has become extremely important, a food bank. They also have a really cool thrift store. I found out, too, that for some of the other things I do with retro electronics, oh boy, is that worth visiting. They have no retro electronics. If you're into that, go somewhere else. But everything else is great to go there.
It's too late. They already got it.
Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag on that one, huh? So anyway, yeah. To everybody, Merry Yule, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year's, Happy Hanukkah, and happy whatever it is you do this time of year. We will see you in 2026. Until then, this is User-Friendly 2.0, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User-Friendly 2.0 Copyright 2013 to 2025 by User-Friendly Media Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. Content is the opinion of the show's participants and not necessarily this station or platform. Requests for material use, interviews, CCPA, privacy notice for California residents, GDPR information for UK and EU residents, and any other feedback may be submitted at userfriendly.show. We welcome your input. Thank you for listening.